The briefing is brought to you in association with the Sustainable Cities in Action Forum at Expo City Dubai. The Sustainable Cities in Action Forum at Expo City Dubai is a place for city leaders, developers, architects and designers to come together and innovate for the future of urban spaces. It's an opportunity for the Global South to convene in the Global South. It's a testbed for real-world solutions that will shape the future of people and planet. You can hear from the innovative thinkers and inspirational voices that drove the narrative at this year's edition by listening to Monocle's special episodes of The Briefing, recorded live at Expo City Dubai in March. Find and listen to the shows now at monocle.com or wherever you get your podcasts. The Sustainable Cities in Action Forum 2024. Collaborate, innovate, transform.
You are listening to The Briefing, first broadcast on the 25th of November 2021 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Briefing, coming to you live from Studio One here at Midori House in London. I am Markus Hippi. Coming up on today's programme...
I never thought this day would come, but God is good.
Yes, He is.
And I just want to tell everybody, thank you. Thank you for those who marched. Now, Quez, which you know him as Ahmad, I know him as Quez.
Yes.
He will now rest in peace.
Yes. Amen.
Three men are convicted of murdering Ahmaud Arbery. We'll unpack the verdict and the trial's significance in America. Also ahead, Chile prepares for its most polarized presidential election in decades. Monocle's Lucinda Elliott will have the latest as the country heads to the second round of voting. Plus, we'll get an update from the Hay Festival winter weekend. And it's Thursday, and that means it's time for Fernando Augusto Pacheco's Global Pop Countdown. Where are you taking us today, Fernando?
Buenas tardes, Marcos. Today we're heading somewhere in the Iberian Peninsula for some great pop tunes.
All that right here on The Briefing with me, Marcos Hippi. A jury in the state of Georgia has convicted three white men of killing Ahmaud Arbery, an unarmed black man. The men had chased Mr. Arbery, who was on a jog, suspecting him of burglary. The trio were found guilty of murder, aggravated assault, false imprisonment, and criminal intent to commit a felony. All three men now face life sentences. Monocle's North America correspondent Thomas Lewis filed this report right after the verdict. Take a listen.
Well, it took the 12 members of the jury, 11 of whom, it's worth noting, were white, around 10 hours spread over 2 days of deliberations to come to their verdict, which was announced just a few hours ago. And that verdict has found that Greg McMichael, his son Travis McMichael, and their neighbour, William Roddy Bryan, were guilty of Ahmaud Arbery's murder last February. Now, Ahmaud Arbery was jogging on his own. He was unarmed on a Sunday afternoon late last February. When the three men spotted him, they believed that he'd broken into a house that was under construction in the neighbourhood. They chased him down, they penned him in with their vehicles, and Travis McMichael shot him 3 times at relatively close range. Now, Ahmaud Arbery's killing was, of course, one of the key cases that drove the mass anti-racism protest that swept across the United States last summer. So the interest in the trial and, of course, in today's verdict has really been acute and quite intense across the country. Now, among those in the courtroom to hear today's verdict were members of Ahmaud Arbery's family, and his mother, Wanda Cooper-Jones, spoke briefly to reporters outside the courtroom after the verdict had been announced, and this is some of what she had to say.
I never thought this day would come, but God is good.
Yes, He is.
And I just want to tell everybody, thank you for those who marched, those who prayed, most of all the ones who prayed.
Yes, Lord.
Yes. Thank you, God.
Yes, Lord.
Thank you. And now Quez, which you know him as Ahmaud, I know him as Quez.
Yes.
He will now rest in peace.
Amen.
That was Wanda Cooper-Jones, Ahmad Arbery's mother, who spoke to reporters outside the courthouse shortly after the guilty verdict had been announced. Now, what happens next? Well, we are expecting sentencing. We don't know when that will take place at this stage. We do know, however, that the crimes that the three men have been found guilty of do come with a minimum life prison term. There is also a suggestion, too, that an appeal may come. There have been some legal scholars in the state of Georgia who've been speaking to the US media today. They suggest that an appeal is likely. But the interest in this case and the way the case and the trial itself was conducted has gained so much scrutiny over these past days that the responses have come from across the political spectrum and from all tiers of the US establishment. US President Joe Biden issued a written statement. He said that while the guilty verdicts reflect our justice system doing its job, that alone is not enough. And I would like to read you a part of the statement issued by US Vice President Kamala Harris. She is, of course, a lawyer herself, and she chose to respond to the way the trial, particularly by the defense counsel, had been conducted. This is some of what she wrote in her statement a little earlier today. The defense counsel chose to set a tone that cast the attendance of ministers at the trial as intimidation and dehumanized a young black man with racist tropes. The jury arrived at its verdicts despite these tactics. And she concludes her statement by saying, Ahmad Arbery was a son. He was a brother. He was a friend. His life had meaning. We will not forget him. We honour him best by continuing the fight for justice.
Monocle's North America correspondent Thomas Lewis there. Well, let's unpack this verdict further. Joining me in the studio is Monocle's news editor Chris Chemek. Chris, first of all, how would you describe the significance of this verdict?
To put it honestly, it's significant in some ways. It's not significant in others, Marcus. I mean, it's just one thing that's notable is how hard it was to get this verdict in the first place. You know, there were two prosecutors that were recused, one of which was indicted for shielding the defense. It took 74 days before the now convicted murderers of Ahmaud Arbery were arrested. There had to be video footage, which was taken by the defendants, that was then leaked in order for this to come out. So essentially, so many things had to go right in order to get to this stage of a verdict yesterday. And despite all of that, there was still a worry that the jury would get this wrong. And that's essentially why, when you talk of significance, there was still, you saw and you heard in Thomas's piece there was just such a relief at the verdict in the community. In that sense, it was seen as a significant step in the right direction. But clearly, there is a huge, long way to go, given the fact that, you know, this it's just a sign of like all these things. So many things could have gone differently that would not have led to this verdict in the first place.
A long way to go, you say. This certainly wasn't the only case of its kind. Just last week, a not guilty verdict was returned in the case of Kyle Rittenhouse, which was something that very much caused anger and divided the country.
It did, exactly. And that's, I think, what shows just how much further there is to go. There are so many debates in the justice system right now. Some of them are about issues like racism in the justice system and what role that plays. Others are simply about the laws that are in place. In the case of Ahmaud Arbery, it was just, you know, you could say the case was significant, as I mentioned, but on the other hand, based on the law and the video, it was clear what had to happen in this case, what kind of verdict should come. In the case of Kyle Rittenhouse, there is so much debate, in large part because the law, in many ways, it did exonerate him, where you could say that there was a case under U.S. law for him to be exonerated. He was able to argue self-defense. That was an option for him. People are allowed to carry guns openly in the U.S. in many U.S. states, and that is why this was allowed. So there's really been this mix of verdicts that we've seen that have divided America over the last week. There was also a case in Charlottesville that we should mention, which shows another aspect of sort of how this is being tackled in different ways. A civil lawsuit there was brought against white supremacists in the Unite the Right rally that happened there. They were found liable for $25 million in damages to those who were impacted at the rally. I mean, that's also just a sign of kind of how fractured and how different the approaches are right now in the U.S. Some are taking almost this civil route, if you will, because they feel they have no criminal recourse. So in many ways, also laws just need to be changed in order for certain verdicts to come. That's part of the issue as well. Mm. And finally, it is, of course, worth mentioning, as to go back to Ahmaud Arbery, just the fact that there was cell phone footage was so crucial. Without that, I think that's where a lot of the worry comes in terms of how far we have to go. Unless you have such a very clear, objective view of things, it's hard to get a conviction.
Exactly. Just finally, Chris, the question over gun control in the U.S. Do you think something will eventually change?
Well, sadly, it looks more like things might go in the other direction. There is, for example, a key court case at the Supreme Court at the moment, where we might hear sometime between now and June from the Supreme Court on whether you can carry guns openly in American society, whether you have a constitutional right to carry guns openly in society. That is a key question currently before the Supreme Court. They could well, given the conservative majority we have in the U.S., it is possible that they will rule in favor of allowing open carry. And this is important in the cases of Ahmaud Arbery, in the case of Kyle Rittenhouse, because there is this feeling, particularly among Black Americans, that they do not feel safe in many American communities. And that's partly because of the amount of guns that do exist in American society. And then also a double standard that then exists within that about who is allowed to carry a gun in American society, who gets away with carrying a gun. And that was a lot of the focus as well this week when it comes to both of these cases, the sort of double standards in the U.S. justice system, who gets away with what based on the color of your skin.
Chris, Joe McMonagle's news editor there. Thank you very much for joining us here on The Briefing. Now here is Monagle's Carol Tarabello with the day's other news headlines.
Thanks, Marcus. At least 27 people have drowned in the English Channel while trying to cross from France to the UK in the worst disaster on record involving migrants in the Channel. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson and French President Emmanuel Macron agreed to step up efforts to prevent migrants from making the journey. 4 suspected people smugglers have been arrested by French authorities. Australia is sending peacekeeping troops to the Solomon Islands as violence continues across the capital city of Honiara for a second day. Protesters had stormed the parliament in a bid to oust the prime minister, defying a lockdown and setting fire to government buildings and businesses. Scott Morrison said police and army personnel would provide stability and security to the Pacific Island nation. The Biden administration has placed a dozen more Chinese companies on a blacklist of firms over national security concerns. Many of the groups on the so-called entity list stand accused of helping China's army to crack America's encryption codes. The move comes amid growing tensions between Beijing and Washington over Taiwan and trade policy. And the nominations are in for the Grammy Awards. The voting process has also been reformed. The anonymous committees that used to select the shortlists have been scrapped, leaving the decisions with members of the Recording Academy. Read more about the awards, including the addition of a new category, on our daily newsletter, The Monocle Minute. Just subscribe at monocle.com/minute. Those are the day's headlines. Back to you, Marcus.
Thanks, Carlotta. We head now to Latin America for a rundown of stories with Lucinda Elliott, Monocle's correspondent in the region. Lucinda has recently returned from Santiago for Chile's general election over the weekend. Welcome to the program. So, Lucinda, what was the mood like in Chile?
Well, broadly, Marcus, I found the city of Santiago quite downbeat. I mean, Chile is still reeling from these very violent protests that took place in late 2019, and the graffiti and the memories of that can be seen all over town, obviously on top of the pandemic. I mean, it's worth saying how Chile and its capital really differs from other major Latin American cities in that things actually work. I mean, the COVID procedures at the airport and around town are like nothing I've seen before. You know, you're tested on entry, you have to update your systems daily online, mask wearing is extremely strict, the metro is very efficient. But that progress has made the country stand out, that has made the country stand out over the past 20 years, is really being assessed now. And the economic model is being called into question, because as I found, there are great levels of social inequality. And the two front runners in this presidential race, Cast and Boric, who will now go to a runoff, have very different ideas for the economic and political future of Chile, one from the conservative side and one from the further to the left.
Now, Lucinda, the big question is, why did only 45% of Chileans bother to vote?
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of reasons for this pretty dismal turnout, and this is not something new. I found there were similar figures that were recorded in the last two presidential first rounds. And in Chile, unlike in most countries in South America, like Brazil or like Argentina, voting is not mandatory. So for the past decade, you can choose whether to vote, and up until recently, you weren't automatically registered either. Then on the back of that, something that I believe had started in the mid-1990s after the return to democracy is that many people no longer identify with political parties, at least the ones that have been on the ticket for the past 30 years. And that creates a level of apathy among voters. In fact, fewer than 20% of Chileans in a survey in 2019 said that they actually identified with a political group. And sort of the third aspect, which I certainly saw when I went to a more working class kind of part of town to the south of Santiago, was there's very little in the way of civic engagement or education around voting. I mean, there were more people going to the market on Sunday than queuing at the polling station. This all leads to these quite honestly pretty poor turnout rates. And in the second round, both contenders will now be looking to attract more people who simply don't ever go out to vote.
That presidential runoff is less than a month away. What do you expect from the next 3.5 weeks?
Well, the votes are really fragmented. You have Gabriel Boric on the left. He's narrowly behind with roughly 25% of the vote in the first round versus 27% for Cast, who's an ultra-conservative. And they need the centre. You know, one very interesting third place is this chap called Parisi, who was campaigning from Alabama in the United States because he faces fines in Chile if he returns for reportedly not paying child support. So he didn't even vote on Sunday in the country and got just under 14%. And he's a big social media star, he's a businessman, and he's actually said that he's going to decide who to back by asking his followers on social media. So there's going to be a poll online and his supporters will choose whether it's Cast or Boric. So all in all, very unlike Chile, really, that's sort of been ambling along calmly with a stable economy, unlike its neighbours over the past few years. But, you know, since 2019, it's become quite a story. So I'd say it's all to play for on December 19.
Lucinda, let's cover another news story from your region too. The Falklands are causing quite a stir in Argentina again, and this time over migrants. Tell us more.
Yeah, so Marcus, I turned on the Argentine evening news, and not only did Boris Johnson and his Peppa Pig story come up with Spanish subtitles, but they are outraged at a suggestion that was made by a conservative MP in England that the Falklands, or Las Malvinas, if you're Argentine, should be considered as a possible holding point for asylum seekers wanting to live in Britain. I believe earlier Gibraltar and the Isle of Man were other suggestions that had been made by the Home Secretary. But the reaction, as you can imagine, hasn't been positive. Argentina still makes its claim to the territory, but I don't think even anyone in Britain would consider it, given how far the islands are from the UK. So not great international headlines for Britain in South America this week.
Lucinda Elliott there, thank you very much for that roundup of the stories from Latin America. You are listening to The Briefing on Monocle 24.
Watch out for Monocle Films. Since launch, Monocle's eagle-eyed filmmakers and journalists have cut and framed visually vivid dispatches and documentaries from all corners of the globe, from one-on-one interviews to industry reports and journeys where you won't believe your eyes. With hundreds of films available now and for free at monocle.com/film, there's never been more to see. Let's roll.
And you are back with The Briefing on Monocle 24. Now the bookworms among our listeners will be pleased to hear that the Hay Festival Winter Weekend has returned to the Welsh town of Hay-on-Wye with an ambitious 5-day literature programme. I'm joined now by Monocle's resident book lover and host of Meet the Writers, Georgina Godwin, who is, of course, at the event. Good afternoon to you, Georgina.
Hi, Marcus. It's lovely to talk to you. I want to take issue with your word bookworm.
Why?
Well, you know, it sounds kind of negative, doesn't it? So I was wondering today where it came from. And there are actual insects that live in books that love kind of eating the glue. But what I thought was really interesting was once I started looking at it, in Indonesia, they call them book fleas. In Romania, they call them library mouse. In German, it's a reed rat. In French, it's an ink drinker. And in Danish, it's a reading horse.
I think compared to a reed rat, bookworm sounds decent anyway. But hey, let's talk about where you are now. So last year, annual Hay Festival was partly held online and in person due to the pandemic, of course. So what is the situation over there now? What does it look like? How has hay recovered post-COVID?
You know, it's bounced back so beautifully. Pardon the dog.
Did you bring your dog with you?
In the background. Of course. There's a whole pack of them.
Do you want to tell our listeners what's happening over there?
It really has bounced back. It's absolutely brilliant. I mean, so last year it was very, very kind of mostly online. There were very few events that happened actually in person. And so it's wonderful to see all of these people back in the room. I mean, people are masked, obviously, and I think that the rules in Wales are a little bit stricter than in England. But actually, it's wonderful to see people there and actually to have people on the stage. You know, absolutely nothing can make up for that face-to-face experience.
Now, how much can you tell us about the programme of events lined up this time round?
So some wonderful things. The Oscar winner Emerald Fennell will be here. The Adventurer Bear Grylls, broadcasters Anita Rani, Claire Balding, Fee Glover, Jane Garvey. Also David Hare, who's talking about his essays and poems. Lots of changes in culture and politics. And he talks about all sorts of things from the photographer Lee Miller to Sarah Bernhardt to Jimmy Savile. All sorts of things. Very much kind of capturing the zeitgeist right now. A little bit later on today, I'm going to see Dan Saladino, who's exploring foods around the world that are threatened with extinction. And he looks at what this means for humanity and the future of the planet. Also, Robin Ince, who's the comedian, writer and broadcaster, is talking about one of the most popular science podcasts, The Infinite Monkey Cage. And he talks about why science isn't just for professionals and why curiosity in the field really sparks humility. And I think possibly the biggest highlight for me is actually nothing to do with literature. Tomorrow night, the actor Miriam Margolyes is switching on the town's Christmas lights, and then she has an event. And of course, that is really all about the community here. And the community is so strong, not just locals, and there is a wonderful local community, but also people coming in from all over the country and indeed the world. And I think that's going to be a massive street party.
That sounds amazing. Tell me about how international that event is this time around. Obviously, UK is still, it's a bit tricky to come to this country considering that you have to fill some forms and you have to book yourself a test. Do you think that has limited the number of participants from around the world?
You know, I mean, there are a few people in terms of people who are actually speaking. There are a few people joining us on Zoom. So some of those are just, you know, digitally. But there are a lot of people. So, for instance, the winner of the Bailey Gifford Prize was here in person from the States and various others. And just looking at the members of the audience, it's clear that there are some people here from further afield who've taken that chance and booked their tickets, and luckily it's worked so that they've been able to be here.
Now, Georgina, what is there still about to take place you're looking forward to in particular?
Oh, gosh, there's so much going on. And I'm sort of, you know, it's really difficult when you look at a programme and try and decide what it is that you're actually going to go and see. I think I'm really looking forward to Sarah Hall, the author, and also Elizabeth Day. And as I say, Miriam Margolyes will be wonderful. But there's also, you know, a lot of pop-ups around the town. So there's a lot of food and drink. You know, you wouldn't think that Wales was a place for Mexican food, for instance. But there is a fantastic kind of Mexicana pop-up where you can go and get your tacos and things. And then, as I say, the town just comes alive. And Hay, of course, is known for its bookshops. And that, I think, is one of the key highlights for me, because I'm not really working this time, not doing much on stage. So I'm going to have time to really root around in those bookshelves. Now, Marcus, I think you're aware of how much book post I get at Monocle, probably around 50 books a week. But I'm afraid that doesn't stop me from buying more when I'm here.
I hope you've got a big suitcase with you. Just finally, Georgina, paint a picture. What happens in the evenings over there when the official programming ends for the day? Is there much networking, mingling taking place, people eating tacos? Are the pubs busy?
Well, absolutely. As I said, in French, bookworm is ink drinker. Well, I think you could just put drinker in there. So there is a lot of socialising, and you know, it's just wonderful just to be able to catch up with members of the book community, and not just writers, but the publishers, the PRs, and various other people, and of course fellow book lovers, or indeed bookworms.
Monocle's Georgina Godwin, they're joining us from Hay on Wye. You are listening to The Briefing on Monocle 24. And finally on today's programme, it's time for our weekly pop extravaganza with Monocle senior correspondent Fernando Augusto Pacheco. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, Marcus. And as you know from my Buenas Tardes, actually could have been many countries, but we're heading to Spain today, actually.
Why?
A country that I don't do very much, actually. And it's a shame because, in fact, Marcus, one of those tracks I will be adding to the Monocle 24 playlist.
Oh, really? So it's been a success this time round, Global Countdown?
It's been a success. And I'll tell you, number four. Five, it isn't. In fact, it's probably my least favorite track, but still, it's an interesting story here. It's a Jamaican producer. His name is Russian, but you spell it R-V-S-S-I-A-N. Mm. And the reason why? Because it was very hard to search for him on Google. So he said, let me add a V. So it becomes easy, but you still pronounce it as Russian.
Good to know.
Good to know, right? And he did the song with Raul Alejandro from Puerto Rico. And you know who else? Chris Brown from the United States. Yeah, he's kind of back in the Spanish charts. Let's have a listen to this track. And number five is Nostálgico.
So the name of the track was Nostálgico, so I presume it's about nostalgia.
Nostalgic love.
Oh.
I mean, everything's about love, right, Marcus? But yeah, it's a nice track. And from what I've been reading about Russian, he's becoming, you know, he's a very important producer, coming from Jamaica. Nice combination of Jamaica, Puerto Rico, and the US as well with Chris Brown. Surprising to see him there.
So I have to admit that this time round, I've got some notes in front of me, so I still don't know who exactly we're hearing from, but I think I've got song titles over here, and I can tell our listeners that the next song is about experimenting in something.
Ooh, you're very good of your Spanish, Marcus. I mean,
well, the song is called Experimento.
Exactly. And I'll tell you which type of experiment he's looking for. This is the 27-year-old Mike Towers, also from Puerto Rico, which is, you know, a very important music market. Let's have a listen. I like the beat of this song, actually. Number four. No lo puedo negar, yeah. Me tiene envuelto. Ella escogió el lugar. Quiso conmigo probar un experimento. Tenemos química, no me pone a dudar.
Experimento, is this the track you were talking about that's going to be added to the Monocle 24 playlist?
Not this one. And the lyrics you're asking, which type of experiment? The lyric says, she wanted to try an experiment with me. We have chemistry without a doubt. Do you see the connection, chemistry, experiment?
Oh, clever.
Very clever. I mean, I do like this track. Who knows? Maybe I will be adding. Number three, I'm not going to add the song, but it doesn't mean it's bad. And it's quite an interesting story here. He's a producer from Argentina. His name is Bizarrap. He's, again, a very young producer, kind of EDM, a little bit of trap. And he does sessions with other artists. So, for example, this session is called BZRP Music Sessions Volume 46. Mm-hmm. And this time he invited Puerto Rico, a rapper and singer, Anuel AA. So it's a very interesting concept, and they do like a song, you know, an average song, like a 4-minute track, which there's no name for it. It's just the volume 46.
Right.
And it's been a hit. I mean, every single volume that he releases, and of course, Anuel AA is a big, big name as well. Shall we have a listen, Marcus?
Let's
number
do.
Three.
Hacia el caserío, hacia mi caserío. Yo soy de calentón, pero en la brea estamos frío. Cabrón, a mi familia vende droga hasta mi tío. De miedo me voy preso, mato y muero por lo mío. Porque hacia el caserío, hacia mi caserío. La desvistieron mío, solo en medio se los crío. Me dijo que le pierdo, pues entonces hacemos un trío.
And Marcus, can you believe that Bizarrap has, I believe, one of the largest YouTube channels in the world?
How many followers?
I mean, more than 20 million, for sure. It is a lot. It's a very successful story from Bizarrap as well. And number two, I have to say, I think it's more my style.
Is this the one that's going to be added to the playlist now?
It's not, actually.
Ah, so number one is going to be added.
But it would fit very well. Basically, he's a rapper from Valencia, Spain, Zoilo. He released this track last year, but without the featuring guest. I mean, people liked it, I guess.
And who is the featuring guest now?
The featuring guest is another Spanish singer called Aitana. You know, she loved the track and then said, shall we do a collaboration? And it all worked out, but she's a big name. She was a runner-up of Operación Triunfo, one of a music talent show, a really big name in the Spanish music industry. Let's have a listen. I love the song by Zoilo and Aitana, Mon Amour, the remix.
Pensar en ti cuando me acuesto, pero Aitana, no imaginas el resto, que si no, no queda bonito esto.
Voy a ir directa a ti, voy a mirarte a los ojos, no te voy a mentir. Y como los niños chicos te pediré salir, esperando un sí.
This song is number two in the Spanish singles chart at the moment.
Very much. And you know, they're both Spanish. So far, we're looking at Latin America. But, you know, I think the Spanish, they're very open. You know, I mean, they have the whole of Latin America to choose the same language. And, of course, they influence each other, artists from, you know, both countries and regions. I love number one, Marco. So that's the track I think I'll
be
adding.
Is it Spanish?
It is Spanish. Kind of half Spanish, half Argentinian. It's with a Spanish rapper called C. Tangana and Nathy Peluso. She's actually already in the playlist with a song called Buenos Aires. I mean, she's Argentinian, so it makes sense. The song's called Ateo, Atheist, and I'll tell you why they mentioned his name. The video is beautiful for that track. I recommend everyone to watch. But let's have a listen. C. Tangana and Nathy Peluso with Ateo.
Cada día. Aquí no me va a matar una vieja herida. Déjales que hablen mal, se mueran de envidia.
Number one in Spain at the moment, this track.
And by the way, it's not really a religious track, but they say, I was an atheist, but now I believe, because a miracle came down from heaven. It's about love, not religion, you know, so, you know, don't worry. I think it's a lovely track, and Nathy Peluso, she's becoming a proper massive star from Argentina as well.
Excellent. Thank you very much for this roundup of what's happening in Spain this week, Fernando Augusto Pacheco there. And that's all for this edition of The Briefing. It was produced by Emma Searle and Chris Chermock. Our researcher was Lillian Fawcett and our studio manager was Chris Ablakwa. The Briefing is back tomorrow at the same time. That's at midday here in London, 7 a.m. in Washington, D.C. I am Marcus Hippi. Thanks for listening and bye for now.